Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
I'm Rob Norman.
I'm Andrew Norton.
And on Personal Best, we help you tackle the stuff you'd be too embarrassed to ask an attractive, successful life coach about.
That's right. We have a slightly different approach to self-improvement.
Which is, we don't know what we're doing.
Definitely somebody following me.
Okay, she's holding a sword.
This is so nuts.
But in the end, it always works. Okay, it sometimes works.
You have no idea how happy this makes me.
Personal Best, Season 3. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from the BBC. I'm Jane Chambers, and in this edition of Assignment, I'm in Panama, where the canal and an increasing population are both demanding their share of a finite resource, water. Panama is one of the wettest countries in the world. Every year in April, the rains begin, and they generally don't stop until the end of November. Often that means torrential downpours like the one I'm sheltering from at the moment. With many parts of the world suffering droughts, you'd think this would be good news for people who want a regular water supply. But in Panama, things are not that simple. We're in a small shop with Leonardo. You can probably hear the rain beating down on the roof, and they sell things like juice and bread, and there's a fridge with cans of soft drinks in it. But before, Leonardo had another business.
Will I have to stop selling chicken and pork because I didn't have enough water? Without it, I couldn't sell meat because good hygiene requires you to have water. So I have to close down the business.
Ironic, isn't it? Leonardo's community is La Siesta de Tocumen, and it's not actually as remote as you might imagine for a place without pipe water. Tocumen International Airport, the main airport for Panama City, a big regional transport hub, is just down the road, so a regular safe water supply is very near at hand, but Leonardo's not getting a share of it.
What's the issue with water? Because we can hear the rain pelting down, and yet you don't have access to water for your business?
It arrives in tankers every 3 or 4 days. Before, it took up to 15 days for the water to arrive here. The government keeps saying it will solve it, but we are still waiting.
I'm Jane Chambers, and this is the documentary from the BBC World Service. And in this edition of Assignment, I'm looking at the mass of contradictions which is Panama, a canal which raises billions of dollars a year for the government, but where people still live without drinking water. And a country where, despite heavy rain falling 8 months of the year, they're seriously worried that now, and in the future, there won't be enough water to go around. Especially, as Leonardo explains, the population's growing all the time.
What's their reason? Because we're near the airport. Why is there no water here?
They say it's because of the number of slums which have been built here. So they give them water, and then the whole population of the area is left without. It's been like this for 45 years.
And so for you, what is the solution?
We pay for cell phones, we pay for internet. We should be able to pay to have water piped here.
While Leonardo and his community continue to wait for piped drinking water, other communities have taken things into their own hands. If they're not formally connected to the water network, they've decided to do it informally. I'm with Edwin Alvila from EDAM, the main water company here in Panama, and I'm on my way north to a community who've settled here next to a main road. It's one of many in the country which have sprung up with people who can't afford to rent or buy a regular property. So instead, they've taken over a patch of land and tried to call it home.
Yeah.
So we've driven about 20 minutes from the centre of Panama, and in front of me there are just all these white pipes snaking over the land.
This community is called Hope. There are at least 500 families living in this area, and this is only one example.
Why don't these people have access to drinking water?
Because they arrived unofficially. There was no electricity, there was no water, there was no road. There are people who have nowhere to live. They now have electricity, but they haven't yet been connected to the mains water supply. So they connect illegally.
So you're talking about them as informal connections, but effectively they're stealing water. Shouldn't you be disconnecting them?
That's right, but it's not really government policy to disconnect people. Children cannot be without water, or they'll get ill. Normally, we'd bring a water tanker lorry, but a tanker cannot enter here. There is no road. So we allow them to informally connect to the mains water supply.
So we've come up the hill to the middle of the community, past stray dogs and chickens. It's very, very hot. We're a bit out of breath. There's lots of rubbish around. I should imagine they never see rubbish collectors. And I've come to a small kiosk where they sell things to the local community to talk to a woman who's lived here for the last 15 years.
My name is Claudia. We don't want to steal the water because we are effectively stealing from the country. But there are a lot of broken pipes, so a lot of the water is lost, which is needed. What we hope is that everyone gets piped water, we pay for the water, and everyone gets their water to their house.
What made you come here? Because it's a very difficult place to live. People can't come here and get the rubbish. You have to cross a very busy main road for the children to go to school.
Living in a city is difficult because you have to pay rent, we have children, and work is difficult. You have to find a way to earn a living, something you can do, like this little kiosk I have here, which earns me a living. We need a lot of improvements made here. At the moment, this is a community which has been forgotten, to say the least.
Claudia is understandably unhappy that after so many years in this community, she still isn't connected officially to the mains. So I think it's time I went to the water company offices back in Panama City to find out why that is. The main lake that supplies water for 2.5 million people around the capital is also required to work the locks of the Panama Canal, with its huge demand of tens of millions of gallons of water for each ship that makes the crossing. It's easy to see the potential for conflict between the canal authority and the water authority. Claudia mentioned how many leaky and broken pipes there are in Panama. So while she can't get pipe water, large quantities have been lost before it gets to customers who can. Another irony is that I've heard that when the water arrived, it's consumed by Panamanians in vast quantities. That's probably down to the fact that water here is incredibly cheap, so there's little incentive for consumers to conserve or ration its use. Edwin's boss at the water company is Juan Antonio Ducuret.
We have now something like 3 million people's customer, but unfortunately we can talk about 300,000 people that don't have this access, and this is the gap that is growing, and we need public investment in network.
Yeah, I've been told that people in Panama use maybe 2.5 more amount of water than other countries around the world.
The use of the water is too high in average if you compare with the other countries. Of course, we need to review the rates.
And what are the rates? You still what does an average household?
Yes, no, I can say it's 21 cents of US dollars for cubic meters.
I was then keen to find out if customers pay 21 cents per cubic meter, how much it costs to produce. The Panamanian Society of Engineers and Architects was recently quoted saying that it costs 80 cents, four times as much as the water authority was selling it for. Is that really true? How much is it costing to produce? You've told me 21 cents they're paying, but how much is it actually?
Yeah, that depends. In average, it's something like 14 cents per cubic meters.
Okay, because we'd seen figures where it said it was 81 cents to produce.
Yes.
Water?
Yes.
And that's true, it is that much?
But at the final, you need to be careful with the average.
So it sounded to me like 14 cents and 81 cents were somehow both correct. This is something I was starting to discover in Panama a lot. Apparent confusion or disagreement over very important figures. I'd read that as much as half of the water for consumers in the country was unaccounted for, either lost through leaks or informally supplying communities like Hope, which we'd just visited, who don't pay for it.
And how much water are you currently losing? I understand that there are kind of leaks in the pipes.
The average in Panama is 38%.
How much percent?
38%.
38%?
Yes.
That's a lot, isn't it?
So it may be just over a third rather than half of all water that's lost, but that's still a lot. Even so, Juan Antonio Ducoret says these losses are low when compared to what the canal uses to work its locks. The amount of water it takes for these locks to allow one ship to cross the canal is known in industry speak as a transit. The director says for just one ship to pass through the canal, one transit, equates to all the water he loses. So total water consumption is just three ship passages or transits by his reckoning. And the canal generally has to find water for 36 transits a day to pass through, which is politically important because 2.5 million consumers rely on the same source for their water as the canal does to operate its locks, Lake Gatón. If demand exceeds supply, in a drought, for example, something has to give.
The losses of the drinking water plants is pretty low if you compare with the use of the water for the transit. Just to compare, the Panama Canal have average 36 transit a day. All of the losses that you can have in the IDAN maybe is one transit a day.
Juan Antonio Ducoret estimates 2,000 kilometers of new pipework will have to be built to keep that water flowing.
Yes, this is one of our challenges. Government need to invest something like maybe in the next 10 years, $800 million.
That $800 million is just to install new water pipes. The figure Juan Antonio Ducoret gives me to include new drinking water plants, sewage and waste systems is $2.5 billion. This is a documentary from the BBC World Service.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
He owned iconic luxury brands.
Harrods was the ultimate glamorous shop.
The most famous people in the world coming there.
But Mohammed Al-Fayed used his wealth and power to control more than just his business interests.
One of his HR team approached me and said, the chairman would like you to work in his office.
It was pretty quick that my gut instinct started to go, this is not right.
The only thing that he was interested in was touching my body.
World of Secrets, Season 4. Al-Fayed, Predator at Harrods. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Jane Chambers on assignment in Panama. Despite these challenges, the water company is managing to bring piped water to some communities who haven't had a reliable supply until now. I'm on my way to Chilibre, a town about half an hour north of Panama City, where they've invested to make this a reality.
My name is Alan Nunez. I'm ingeniero de apoyo in this project.
So you're like a support engineer?
Exactly, a support engineer.
Very, very busy here, isn't it? Where by the side of a road, there are pipes being laid, there's lots of machinery, there's wet concrete. When do you think they'll be able to have this water? How long will it take?
It's about in 2025, we're going to have the water from the people. We are working so hard, fast as we can, to get the water to the people.
The new project's costing $20 million, but it will bring a reliable water supply to three towns totaling 60,000 people. You must be very popular here that you're providing water, finally, to the community.
I feel so happy to be working here to provide the people water. The people have told me a lot about how this is going to change their life. We're working so hard to make it possible.
We've seen them laying the pipes and we're just off to meet some community members to find out about their struggle to get piped water. We're going past some pastel-coloured houses, an apricot one, and they've got outside the water tanks, just showing how difficult it is for them to actually get drinking water here. We've got the water truck, which is dropping off water up at the top of the road, and then we're just coming up to a house to see how the water gets delivered here. So we've got a plastic black water tank in front of us, full of water. That's the best way that they can store the water that's delivered to them from the truck up the road, and there are various pipes and pumps getting it here.
Edilza de Galán.
I'm Edilza de Galán. We've been in this fight for piped water more than 40 years. But our communities have been forgotten because they did not think that our population was going to grow so much. We're not just here to carry water. We are here to enjoy our grandchildren and our children, so that they do not have to live through what we have lived through. So we're pinning our hopes on this project.
What was life like at the beginning? How did you get your water?
Before, we had to use water from wells. But since it's become so populated, many have built latrines and septic tanks, and they have already contaminated the water. So it's not suitable for drinking.
And how did you finally convince them to get you this project?
We had to cry and suffer until we had exhausted the last of our energy. The World Bank financed the project. And today we can say thanks to God and the bank and the management of the water company.
You've got the money from the World Bank, but shouldn't it be coming from the government?
It should come from the government, because in Panama there is money. But they don't know how to invest it for the basic needs of the country.
And what are you expecting when it's finished? How will it change your life?
There are no words to express that emotion, because many lives have been lost waiting for this dream. And this is our desire, that no one else experiences the lack of water.
So relief from Aldisa, that at some point she won't have to rely on water tankers anymore. The water she'll be getting will be coming from Lake Gatun. But what Aldisa uses and other residents like her is pretty small beer compared to what a wonder of the modern world uses. I'm talking, of course, about the Panama Canal, which dominates just about every walk of life in this country. I'm at the Miraflores Locks on the Pacific side of Panama to find out how this phenomenal construction project actually functions.
My name is Octavio Colindres. I work for the Panama Canal.
So, Octavio, how does this all work?
The Panama Canal works as a water elevator. It raises and lowers the vessels from one ocean to the other. And basically what it does is raise the vessel 26 meters over sea level, transit to the level of Gatun Lake, the artificial lake, to cross to the other side.
The Panama Canal compared with the Suez Canal, they're like chalk and cheese, they're very different?
They are very different because the Suez Canal, it's a sea level canal. What it means is that when they build it, they just cut the land and the vessels started transiting. At the Panama Canal, the Americans built the sets of locks so the vessels could transit through the Gatun Lake. It is an artificial lake in order to go over the mountains and lower the level to the ocean.
These locks, how do they work and how many are there?
There are three sets of Panamax locks and two sets of the Neo-Panamax locks that are
the big ones.
The big ones, the bigger ones, that are almost three times the size of the Panamax locks that we are seeing now. These Panamax locks were built in 1914, so they are 110 years old. They use fresh water from the Gatun Lake, and this water facilitates the transits of the vessels from one ocean to the other.
And how long does it take from start to finish for a vessel to get across the canal?
Every vessel takes around 8 to 10 hours.
And how much does it cost? You say they have to pay. I expect it's big bucks.
Yes. Every vessel, it's approximately $100,000 to $300,000 on the Panamax locks. And on the Neo-Panamax locks, it could go around $300,000 to even $700,000 to transit.
There's a lot of water involved. How much?
It's around 50 million gallons on each and every transit.
Huge amounts of water.
It is huge, yes, yes.
And what about what kind of things are they transporting? I mean, I've heard we might have some Christmas presents, even though we're in summer.
Probably your Christmas presents are transiting right now.
I mean, it's amazing. Behind us, we've basically got lots and lots of tourists waiting to watch this ship coming through, and you can probably hear the loudspeaker with them being given information. You're not going to find that in many other parts of the world.
People say, if you don't come to Panama Canal, you didn't come to Panama.
So that's how it works. But last year, things didn't go according to plan. I'm off to meet the canal's deputy administrator to find out what went wrong and what she intends to do about it. We were due to meet at the Miraflores lock, but at the last minute, I was asked to come to the authorities' main administrative building. Inside, it's beautifully ornate with huge paintings depicting the 30,000 people who worked on building the canal. And for a building which is more than 100 years old, it's spotlessly clean.
This isn't your average corporate HQ. It's pretty amazing.
Hi. Great to meet you. Ilia Marota. Welcome to our building, the administration building of the Panama Canal from 1914.
My name is Ilia Espino de Marota. I am the deputy administrator of the Panama Canal and chief sustainability officer.
So it's been a difficult past year for the canal. What's been going on?
2023 was a very, very dry year. We had the El Niño, and we did not get the amount of rain that we normally get. Therefore, we were forced for the first time ever to reduce the amount of transits to 24 from 36 to be able to cope with the low lake levels and to be able to provide potable water for 2.5 million people. The priority was not to impact the people's water consumption, so we sacrificed some transits.
Now, when we spoke to the director of the water company, Ijan, earlier, he told us that the water he used was the equivalent to only 3 ship crossings or transits. If that's the case and 12 transits were lost in total last year, logic would say 9 of the losses would not have been to protect drinking water. But when we spoke to Adan, they do say that they use a tiny amount of water compared to what the canal needs to use.
No, we have the data. Right now, it's about 7.5 transits per day. That's the water that gets used for potable water. 24 plus the 7, you got 34 transits right there. So, okay, we maybe had to drop 2 transits because of the lack of water. But if you have 36 transits per day, which is our standard, and we had to drop to 24 and 7 are for water, there's the math.
This disagreement over how much water the canal and the water authority use comes down to what some perceive as an historic conflict between the canal and the interests of ordinary Panamanians. And the numbers really matter about who's using how much water when there's a finite supply, and climate change could reduce this further. Each side insists the other is exaggerating how much they waste and how much they use. And the deputy administrator's math doesn't actually add up. 36 minus 24 is 12. So even if drinking water still accounted for as much as 7 transits, that leaves 5 transits which were cancelled for other reasons, not 2. But it's hundreds of millions of dollars that you've lost?
If we would have not dropped the number of transits, we could have maybe made $100 or $200 million more.
So a lot of money has been lost.
Well, when you think of a revenue of $4 billion, $200 million, it's a lot of money, but not drastic for the context of reducing so many transits.
So in 2016, you invested hundreds of millions of dollars in new locks, which save some water. What impact has that had? Has it made things easier?
Yes and no. The water usage for canal operations has been very, very efficient, but we do have a very increased population. So we are looking into adding additional reservoirs to be able to store more of the rainfall in the good years.
The authority wants to create a new reservoir around the Rio Indio basin. But until this year, there was a problem with that. When the president gave the green light to the new giant locks being built, it was agreed that this was an alternative to the Rio Indio project, which would have meant several thousand people losing their homes.
But the courts have recently ruled that the authority can now do that project as well.
So how many people are affected by this project?
500 families, about 2,000 people would need to be relocated by where the footprint of the lake would be.
And where would they go? What would happen to them?
It would be in the area similar to where they are. We have been working with them for the last 3 or 4 years. First, I have been to Rio Indio. I have talked to the residents. We have showed them all of the information. And when you look at the map, the impact is in a very small area.
So the Canal Authority wants to build a lake in the basin of the Rio Indio. The deputy administrator seems to say that the people currently living there could be persuaded to leave. I'm interested to know if that's really the case. I'm on my way in some pretty appalling driving conditions on a 3-hour trip to see what the local residents have to say. We're in a small community called Limones Chagre, where around 60 families live. It's very lush and tropical here. We've had torrential rain, and I'm just about to talk to someone about what's happening with this project in Rio Indio. Olegario Cedeño is a community leader here. He's a wiry man in his 70s, wearing a baseball cap and a wooden beaded necklace with a cross on it.
We are more than 60 families, where a reservoir is made at the mouth of that river. All these people living here are going to be impacted. At the moment, there is a basic security because we live from agriculture, growing rice, corn, coffee, beans, raising chickens, pigs. What is happening here is quite worrying. It is an underhand project. Underhand because we are not being told the truth. The Panama Canal Authority is trying to deceive us.
Can you explain to me what they've told you about this project?
What they have told us is that we are going to be relocated to other properties like the ones we have, which is impossible because we all have very different properties. They've told us we are valued, but since they announced the building of the reservoir, they've shown us no respect for our land, our families, the church, even the cemeteries. Just total contempt. There is so much insecurity, it affects our health, our legal standing and society here. It leaves us a trauma because you can't extend your farm, because you don't know if it's going to be flooded by the lake or not.
Is anyone in the community in favour of this new project and think it will bring benefits?
Well, at first many did, but now, with everything that is being seen, they are already saying that they do not agree with the project because there are no guarantees. We do not see a future for any of this generation.
So things don't sound too rosy. At least among Olegario's community, there seems to be a complete lack of trust in the canal authority. So I should put some of their points to the deputy administrator.
So can we talk about trust? Because when we spoke to this community, they were telling us how there was a law that said that Rio Indio would be protected, and yet it looks like that law is going to change. And they also said that time and time again, they feel that people have been promised one thing and then end up with another.
As time change and things evolve, you need to adapt to new situations. And in 2023, it's a very different situation from 2006. So we can just show what we have done in the watershed and tell them this could be your watershed too. And hopefully that will be enough of track record that we can gain their trust.
And the logical thing would be, given how much money the canal authority makes, that some of that money it makes should be destined to help with the drinking water for the people.
That's a decision that is from the government, not for the Panama Canal.
And there's the rub. The canal's by far the country's biggest source of income. A minister sits on the board, but it's up to the Panamanian government to decide how the money's spent. And as we've heard throughout this programme, hundreds of thousands of Panamanians living without drinking water think they've been forgotten about. In May this year, a new government was elected. And there's some belief that at last things might be about to change for the better, that the forgotten will finally be remembered. Assignment was presented by me, Jane Chambers. The producer was Bob Howard. The editor was Penny Murphy. And the studio manager, Rod Farker.
So ServiceNow unterstützt ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
He owned iconic luxury brands.
Harrods was the ultimate glamorous shop.
The most famous people in the world coming there.
But Mohammed Al-Fayed used his wealth and power to control more than just his business interests.
One of his HR team approached me and said, the chairman would like you to work in his office.
It was pretty quick that my gut instinct started to go, this is not right.
The only thing that he was interested in was touching my body.
World of Secrets, Season 4. Al-Fayed, Predator at Harrods. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.